ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, pets and creatures of every make and model, fans of entertainment and shenanigans alike. Welcome back to Legends Podcast. I'm Beef.
And I'm John O'Lobster. The Batman comic book villain Joker has received plenty of big and small screen attention, with a history of captivating performances, originating with Cesar Romero in the late 60s Batman TV show, brought to the big screen by Jack Nicholson, and portrayed by Heath Ledger in a posthumous Academy Award-winning turn, the Joker has often eclipsed the Caped Crusader in earning accolades and even receiving top billing in the 1989 Batman movie. Jared Leto, Cameron Monaghan, Mark Hamill, Michael Emerson, and Zach Galifianakis have also lent their faces and voices to the role. In 2019, director Todd Phillips released the first standalone film based on the Joker character, with Joaquin Phoenix donning the face paint and purple suit as Arthur Fleck, a mentally ill, failed stand-up comedian who works as a clown for hire. Joker was a spectacular success for Warner Brothers and the struggling DC film brand, bringing in $1.074 billion worldwide against its relatively small budget of about $60 million. Joker finished as the sixth highest-grossing film of 2019 and supplanted Deadpool 2 to become the highest-grossing R-rated film of all time. Joker also did well at the award shows, with Phoenix bringing home a Golden Globe, a BAFTA, a SAG Award, a Critics' Choice Award, and an Academy Award. The film scored 11 Oscar nominations, including Best Picture, the most of any comic book movie ever, a record previously held by The Dark Knight, though it only took home 2 for Best Actor and Best Score. But Joker's runaway success was not without controversy. The film's portrayal of mental illness received simultaneous praise and condemnation, and threats of violence supposedly inspired by the film's alleged pro-incel, anarchist, and anti-government message prompted some theaters in the U.S. to beef up security or ban screenings of the film outright, though no violence actually occurred. Warner Brothers reportedly laughed when Todd Phillips originally pitched his idea for Joker's standalone movie. But as the DCEU struggles to get back on track after the flop Harley Quinn Birds of Prey, and as protests over systematic injustice spark riots and widespread civil unrest in the wake of a global pandemic, mass unemployment, and a billionaire class that gets ever richer while the poor get ever poorer, we ask, who's laughing now?
See, this almost feels too timely right now.
It does. I mean, to the point that we reconsidered, should we do this movie this week?
I'm glad we stuck it out because it's, I mean, I'll kind of show my hand. It's not a great movie, but I think it portrays mental illness pretty well compared to the only other thing I've seen do it better would be a handful of episodes of the third season of Ozarks. Okay. Wendy's brother loses his shit. Okay. But it's made to be uncomfortable. It's made to be poignant. Yep. And it just happens to be that it all came to a head 6 months after this movie came out.
And the director stated that it's supposed to make you uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to pity Arthur at first, but that is supposed to turn to revulsion, and ultimately it's a litmus test of where does this movie lose you in. You kind of do start rooting for him at the beginning, but where does it lose you? And one of to contrast that, right? So obviously the film is dealing with the effect of social services or lack of social services or lack of services for the mentally ill, right, and what kind of supports are out there. But at the same time, not every mentally ill person becomes a supervillain and a murderer.
No, right? Because, I mean, they also didn't say that, though, either in the movie, because he was in the mental place with a bunch of people and his mom. Like, I mean, everyone in there didn't turn bad in Arkham.
Right. So I think this film is having a very careful nature versus nurture. Are you a product of your environment? Are you a symptom of you know, the sick world around you sickens you, or, you know, are your reaction to everything that's going on, or is
all of it,
or is no one to blame but Arthur in this scenario, right? Because everybody's life is terrible
shit in their own way,
in Gotham City, right? But he's the only one shooting talk show hosts.
Yeah, and I mean, like you say, in the beginning you root for him because he gets the shit kicked out of him multiple times, and, you know, the guy's on the train and this and that, and then he retaliates and you're like, holy shit, what, you know, what is going on? And it makes you feel uncomfortable. And
yeah,
I mean, he is an anti-hero. He's not even, you don't even want to root for him like you did Walter White. It's just, you watch his descent into, and I mean, we'll take it at face value, right?
Sure.
I mean, is it a movie, or is it, or we'll take it as the movie, not did it all not happen? You know what I mean? We'll talk about it as it happened, and then we'll touch that at the end. Because
yeah, and I definitely do want to talk about those ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And also the movie's title, because I think the movie's title is subverting your expectations in a way. So this is New York City, Gotham City in 1981. And much like New York City, Gotham is plagued with crime. There's a trash strike. So, you know, refuse is piling up everywhere.
You're talking about calling in the National Guard.
There's mass unemployment. And there's just this general sense of this is a hellish city to live in at this point in its history. And that certainly tracks with our understanding of New York in the 80s, but kind of like par for the course for Gotham City, right?
Yeah, Gotham's always been, for lack of a better term, a crime-riddled shithole. I mean, that's
a wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Right, exactly. I mean, that's just what it has always been. So, yeah.
And this Gotham City doesn't have Batman to beat up its poor people. So,
and there isn't a lot of, I mean, there's crime, but it doesn't seem like there's the criminal element yet, because there hasn't been a Joker. There isn't a Batman to chase people down. There's not like, I don't know, there's not shootouts and shit going on in the street.
And in fact, you don't see crime, with the exception of the douchebags on the subway.
Right.
And the guys, the kids, basically, the punk kids who stole his sign.
See, and yeah, and that was horrible,
like,
too.
Crime is implied, but no one's mugged, nobody's murdered, that we see until the end of the film.
See, and I like a lot of the little twists, again, watching it this time, the second time, because I've seen it, so now these little twists, I'm not surprised by them. I want to see how they fit in. This Joker technically did kill the Wayne parents, because he incited the riot that, like, you know, and he said, oh, Wayne would just walk over people like me in the streets if I was dead. And then this other clown person saw the Wayne family walking out of the opera or whatever. Like, all of these little things are...
Yeah, it wasn't the opera, but I want to talk about that, too. Let's build to that, because...
Yeah, I'm just, you know, my brain. I'm sporadic. And, okay, so go to where you want and all.
Cathartic moment in the film as well. So to set the scene a little bit more, Thomas Wayne here is a businessman and
kind of a douche,
and a super douche for sure. One might even call him Trumpian in a way. Now, Alec Baldwin was really closely attached with this role and ultimately did not end up taking it. And he, of course, has been playing Trump on SNL quite a bit. So I wonder if it just hit a little too close to home once he read the script.
Yeah, I mean, so, okay, let's talk about that. Do we really need all the Thomas Wayne shit and the Bruce Wayne stuff? I kind of like the hint that that's maybe this version of Joker's father. Even if she was crazy, I still think she could have been knocked up by him, because at the end he finds that really loving.
Right. They never refute it, right?
He just says, your mother was crazy. Right, I mean, that it could have easily been he faked the documents to, don't know. They feel like you don't need them in the movie, especially not the boy, but it's interesting to have them as a background set, you know,
the Wayne people. This connection that Bruce Wayne and Arthur could be half brothers
is so fucking intriguing.
Like, that just adds another layer to
why they hate each other.
Right, the whole rivalry and antagonism. You know, if that's what this is. Now, I don't know, and I want to, again, I want to dance around these ideas a bit,
mm-hmm.
because I have some pronouncements I'll make later. But anyway, the idea that Arthur has this affliction, where we learn early on he has a condition.
The laughing thing.
The uncontrollable laughter.
If I remember, you didn't like this the first time.
I did not. Yeah, I didn't like this. And we talked, I saw this in cinemas the weekend that we talked about American Psycho.
If you want to hear our initial reactions and Wing's initial reactions, go back and listen to the American Psycho cast, because they're basically the same movie.
Yeah. Unreliable narrator, New York in the 80s.
Right.
The whole deal. Like, it's all there.
Killing crime spree. Yeah.
And Batman, right? Because it's Christian Bale. So the laughter of Joaquin Phoenix that is throughout the film.
I loved it.
Is, I for my money, one of the strongest points of this movie. Obviously, Joaquin Phoenix cleaned up at the award shows on the strength of his performance. And I really think this film, it hinges on his acting.
You have to see him descend into madness and
physical,
the pain.
Physical transformation, yeah, that he goes through.
That's horrible. You can, at the end, right before, spoiler alert, he kills the big fat dude that sold him the gun. Yeah. He, like, when he walks to open that door, his shoulder blades are sticking up on either side of his shoulders like an inch out of the skin.
And the idea is that he has this condition where his laughter is uncontrollable. And he tries to stifle it and suppress it, almost like Gollum in Lord of the Rings. Do you want me to let you out? Okay.
That's the most painful thing.
I think the dog
thing.
Wants out. Hold That's that fine. Thought.
We'll open the door in a minute again. The way that he suppresses the laughter and, like, he has a shortness of breath, like he's almost choking for air on
he
his
gags,
laughs.
Yeah, and burps.
It's, yeah, that is like when he's doing that, whatever scene it's in, I am physically uncomfortable.
Yeah. So, and that is so unnerving to watch, and it clearly makes other people uncomfortable. And, you know, it's, they say, like, nobody wants to be around you, you freak everybody out. And he strikes up this relationship with his neighbor, played by Deadpool's Zazie Beetz.
Yep.
And this seems like a sweet, authentic, wholesome relationship.
They both live in a shitty apartment. They just want some comfort.
Right.
Except
one takes care of his mother, one takes care of their daughter.
The part that freaked me out is that the first night that they have sex or they hook up or they have any intimacy is like an hour after he shoots the three dudes on the subway.
Yep. So this clearly is too good to be true, right?
Yeah. Well, the first time I saw the movie, I had no thought that this was coming. I was stunned by the zoom out where they show every shot she was sitting next to him. It was just a blank spot.
They fight club it, right?
Yeah.
They fight club it. Where they play back all these scenes that they had together, and then you realize that he imagined
even
all of them.
When he goes and, like, goes into her apartment and sits down, and you can hear her saying goodnight to her daughter, and then she comes out of the bedroom
and screams.
Yeah, the, like, and then for a second I'm like, okay, maybe she just was startled. Yeah.
You walk out, you see that dude sitting there if you're not expecting him.
Right. Even if
you know the guy.
Yeah, even if you're banging the guy, all of a sudden you're like, oh my God. And then the way she's talking to him, the first couple sentences, you're like, does she not know him?
What?
Oh my God. So did he kill her?
Well, okay. So
these are all hypotheticals because we don't even know if the movie happened.
Hypothetical questions, right? So there are lots of speculation that this is kind of our first entree into Arthur is an unreliable narrator, right? So if he's imagined this entire relationship, what else has he had as a figment of his
imagination? How can he trust anything he's read or done and then to go kill his mom?
So how can you believe that he got away with a triple homicide?
Right.
How can you believe that he killed his mom in the hospital and just walked away when she was hooked up to oxygen and a beeping life support machine? You know, how could the cops have been so dumb as to call his name from 100 feet away up the staircase when he could clearly get away? And then the entire city basically rally around him. Oh, and he gets invited to appear on his favorite talk show of all time to have his moment of triumph.
Okay, so I could see some of these parts actually happening if it would have, like, if the movie wasn't a figment of his imagination, sure. If it is. But, like, a shitty talk show host like Murray or whatever the hell his name is, you're not telling me that he wouldn't put on a horrible stand-up guy and then invite him to the show to mock him? I mean, that's right up some of those nighttime.
That's a Howard Stern type thing, right?
Yeah, like, but I mean, this is Gotham, so I'd expect it on TV. Like, I didn't find that out of the realm.
Of course, it's live. It's a live show. That's also important.
Mad as hell, and I'm not taking it anymore.
Lots of network in this one.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, this all breaks down to how much do you believe of the movie? And I will tell you that there are certain points where you could say when he climbs in the refrigerator, he dies. Because it's when he gets out of the fridge that the phone rings and it's Murray's producer. And so everything after that is him, you know, dreaming because he's dead. There's the school of thought that everything in the movie is his delusion from Arkham Asylum. Because you cut to him at the end, and he's like, oh, you wouldn't get it. And that goes to the Joker's psychosis, right? So the Joker is a criminal mastermind, but Arthur is a sad sack nobody. And so is this the story that he tells himself about his origin to justify who he is?
I hope if... I don't know how they would ever do it, but clearly this guy's way too old to be our Joker, right? Even if, so let's call Bruce Wayne in here, what, 12, 14, even if he's a small 12 or 14?
Oh, yeah, he's like 8 right. For sure,
I'm just saying the highest, like maybe 12 out of him, okay? And that's, let's say this Joker is really young. We're giving him, what, 32, 34, maybe?
Yeah, Joaquin Phoenix is like 50, but sure.
Right, so they're still 20 years apart. So by the time Batman becomes Batman at, say, 30... Or, like, there's going to be a big age difference soon.
Yeah, like Jack Nicholson and Michael Keaton. No, I'm just kidding.
I would like this to be, like, the idea that creates the actual Joker that we would see later.
And Gotham played around with that. The TV show played around with that a little bit
That's
as
right.
Well.
Didn't they have, like, three jump starts to the Joker?
And I referenced Jerome, who was kind of, like, the primary...
Yep.
Joker, played by Cameron Monaghan from Shameless. But there are other sort of ideas going around. I think in DC Comics, there's been up to like three Jokers at once. The Joker's origin is always very kind of murky.
In The Killing Joke, he said a line like, if I ever have an origin story or if I can ever remember it, yeah, I want it to be multiple choice or something.
Yeah.
So
this to me... It's playing all the angles. I think the movie is not coming down one way or the other. It's letting the viewer
choose
decide.
Choose
your own adventure. Which do you want to believe and which not? Like, do you want to believe that in his delusion he has a delusion, right? Like, there's a delusion and then he realizes it within another delusion.
I mean, this could be 5 layers of delusion. He could have done 1/5 of this shit and the rest of it is, you know, smoke dreams.
Yeah. So I think another interesting angle is if you separate the timeline aspect of it, like you said, it's building his animosity towards Bruce Wayne and the Wayne family. Because I think on some level, Joker knows that Batman is Bruce Wayne. So he, or maybe this version of Joker does. So he's building this narrative of why he hates Batman and Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, I could see that.
Sure.
I like that the what if all these different Joker origins are like the Marvel what ifs? I wouldn't mind a shit ton of one-offs showing give me good movies. No one thought this was going to be good, but it was moving.
Elseworlds in DC is kind of that universe. So, all of that being said, I think this movie is less about the mythology and more about the character study. As interesting as that all is to ponder, I think what this story is really trying to do is say, okay, if a character like Joker exists, what would it take to make him?
Right. Or what craziness, social pressures, what?
And again, this is the barest glimpse of Joker kind of at his most maniacal. Like, my thought of the character of Joker is it's someone who would rather set a bomb and kill everybody because he thinks it's funny, right? It's not, like, he doesn't have an agenda. He's not after a political goal. He's not even interested in stealing for wealth. He's about creating chaos because he thinks it's funny.
Correct.
And so we barely scratch the surface of that, right, in this.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't dabble. He doesn't really, he's not about causing the chaos. He's just happy that it is there.
And in a way, his first killing is somewhat justifiable, right? Maybe not hunting down the last guy in the subway station, but his first time or two times he fires the gun is in self-defense.
Yeah. But again, I mean, crazy dude, gun at the children's hospital that probably wouldn't have been found. I mean, I don't know.
It's part of my act.
Right. It's a prop.
So what if you the kids don't think you're funny, you should kill yourself?
Oh, so bad.
But again, he's more akin to Batman in some of the film than he is the Joker, right? Because he is on a certain level trying to at least defend himself. He's acting as a vigilante. He's seen as a vigilante by this mob that kind of embraces him. And Thomas Wayne says, anyone who dresses up in a mask and takes justice into their own hands is a clown. Oh, thanks, Dad.
Right, right. I don't know. I mean, I guess you could see him like that. It's just this, it is rough. The movie is rough because it's so painful. You know, it is nowadays. It's got, you know, the riots and the looting and the craziness going on, and it's uncomfortable that way. And
one of the things that we kind of debated in how we approach this is we're living this right now. And not, I mean, I should clarify, because what we're experiencing now is the result of centuries of abuse,
social injustices,
injustice and inhumane treatment of Black Americans. And like the white mob at the end, or I guess, you know, they all have masks on or clown masks, but most of them that you see are white, that, you know, you're going to riot and cause all this trouble. What's your real gripe, right? Well, in this world, in the world of Joker, the idea is that it's the poor that have been downtrodden, and it really has no race, I guess, is what they're getting at. Now, I think that rings a little hollow in the event, compared to real events.
Correct. Like, yeah, the circumstances are completely different, yet some of the outcomes, especially when you're watching them on film and you hear some of the stuff said, like the National Guard is going to be brought in, and just random shit that was in this movie is very timely. Again, it's not because of, you know, the like you said, the few hundred years or more of oppression and shit like that. This is actually just, it's more like a class warfare in Joker, I guess.
Absolutely.
Kill the rich or whatever.
Yes, absolutely. Kill the rich. Eat the rich.
Eat the rich. Aerosmith, right?
So, well, yeah, but one of the other interesting things is it's like New York in the 80s is where Trump became a thing, right? So at the same time, it's this weird parallel what made us now and...
What was the Watchmen one? Wasn't his dad portrayed in Watchmen?
Watchmen is not that far off. And certainly we're on the 99th anniversary of the Greenwood
Tulsa,
massacre.
Oklahoma massacre.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, was it Black Wall Street, 30 square blocks of mayhem? Whites were dropping dynamite out of planes and shit because we're horrible people.
So we're not that far away from all of this. New York in the 80s, Watchmen, the whole deal. And Alan Moore, who wrote Watchmen, wrote The Killing Joke.
Oh.
So it's no accident that we're comparing the two.
That makes it even, more heavy. Yeah. Heavy, bro.
So I guess one of the things that I want to talk about is what I think are some of the strongest scenes in the movie, and those are the scenes towards the end. I get a little, not that it's bad, but it's painful, the scenes where they're setting up who Arthur is and you're getting to know him. I like it when he starts to slip more into the Joker persona. And one of my favorite scenes in the film is after he kills Randall.
That's the big dude.
The big dude. And then you have Gary, who's the little guy.
He can't get to the freaking door latch.
Oh, so sad.
I like Gary, though. Gary, because like he says, you're always nice to me, Gary.
I'm not going to hurt you.
But still, though, he like finally lets him pass, and he goes, I'm not going to hurt you. And then he walks past, and he's like, blah!
He totally ends up in Joker's gang, right?
Gary?
Yeah.
I mean, why would he not? I mean...
Right?
Pretty sure in the 80s or 90s, Batman's Joker always had a...
Little guy. Hanging out with him.
What are some of the other scenes that you really liked?
Well, the bathroom dance after he kills the dudes on the subway, and you just have that violin playing.
Yeah. I really like the, I don't know if it's a bathroom dance, I think it is, or kitchen dance, but he does a lot of dancing.
He's in like a, and that's another thing about his character, is he kind of starts to reveal himself through dance, and he dances a lot, and at key moments in the film, the most famous being the stairway on those steps in the Bronx.
They had just gotten the soundtrack that day.
Yeah.
So they said they were actually like playing it and having fun with it while he was doing that in the stairwell. But the one that I really like is, like I said, I think it's another bathroom one or somewhere in his apartment, but it's right after he colors his hair and he starts dancing and just like smoking a grit and he's feeling it.
Flinging around his green,
everywhere,
drippy hair and just splattering it. And he's in his tidy whiteies and you see his little Joker package bouncing around.
He's definitely gyrating, all flecking it around.
Helicoptering.
He really makes me want to start smoking cigarettes again. Kids, I'm not condoning smoking. I'm just saying it was like he was smoking it like 80s cool. You know what I mean?
Down to the filter and past it. Like,
yep. Just owning it. Even that last shitty puff.
It is disgusting. There's a fair amount of revulsion in this film. Like, the blood in a lot of scenes, when there is blood, the blood is over the top, it's splatter, the killing is over the top.
When he was smashing Randall's head, it's like they did four or five like CGI splatters right there, and it's like, okay, enough already, I get it, he's dead.
Watch me make these scissors disappear.
Oh, I think you said that last cast too. So gross.
That's The Dark Knight.
The pencil.
Want to see me make this pencil disappear? Yeah. So the scene at the end where he takes his own bloody face and makes a smile.
That is fucking epic. I want to know if he got it that uniform with his own fingers, or if they like CGI'd something in there.
I mean, it is for sure iconic, right?
Yeah, and right before that, the way that he gets, the cop car gets T-boned and whatever, the way that the two or three Jokers lovingly and in reverence drag him out of the cop car and set him on the hood is like haunting.
Yeah. Oh, King of the Virgins. I don't know. This is where I have a little trouble, and I start to buy the this is more fantasy than reality. But at the same time, it tracks within what the movie is setting up. So it's set up from the beginning that there's all of this pent-up frustration. Yeah, it's a
powder keg ready to go.
Ready to go, just looking for something to ignite it and somebody to get behind. And I totally buy it, right?
This also sets up all the Joker's dumb henchmen and minions he's had for every movie and comic. They're all already built in. All he has to do is show up, and then people show up in masks.
Yep.
I mean, this is, you know, them kind of picking him up and all hollering at him around the police car later in the movie. I mean, that would happen now if you had a focal figure. I mean, I don't know. I enjoy it more than I thought I would, even as uncomfortable as it makes me.
And it's well executed. Like, I think the movie is very well executed from start to finish. I think the dialogue is good. Definitely the acting of Joaquin Phoenix is
phenomenal
good.
Phenomenal for him.
The soundtrack is amazing if you listen to just the instrumental score by Hildur...
Von Guandadadr.
Yeah, I don't think there's a Von in there. An Icelandic composer. She did the music for Chernobyl, the series.
Great show.
And it is so good. The staircase dance, he's dancing, you know, the pump up song that he's dancing to there, Rock and Roll Part 2.
I'd be so afraid to like fall down those stairs. He was all weak and
emaciated.
That's
what I was thinking. I'm like, listen, where's my handrail?
Right.
I'm not.
Like, hopefully, right behind the people in camera or the camera operators, there was like four mattresses that they just kept moving down a couple stairs.
On.
Yeah, yeah, in case.
Just see him like, oh, how it should have ended, right? He just falls down the stairs. Gary Glitter, who did that song, convicted pedophile, by the way. My dog is
45 minutes.
Upset.
It's the 45-minute mark, dude. That's what it is.
It is true. She is equally upset by this, but he does not get money from them using the song, but it's a weird parallel there.
Ah, the joys.
I guess this all brings us to Robert De Niro.
Kind of a dick.
Yeah.
I think this was his role, though. He could do this role in other movies, and it would probably be a good movie. Better than most of the shit he's done recently, I'd say.
So there's a reason why he's in this movie, and there's a reason why this movie exists, actually, from the beginning. So Todd Phillips is a director mostly known for doing comedies, like Old School, The Hangover... Due Date, but he always kind of had this idea of doing a Martin Scorsese type film. He always wanted to do like a classic Taxi Driver, Kings of Comedy, Raging Bull type movie. And he figured out that if he pitched it as a comic book movie, because that was getting made, he could probably get somebody to pay for it. So he did one as the story of the Joker.
So cool. It's fun that he actually got shit to do it, you know, that it somehow was made.
And the reason why Robert De Niro is in it is because he starred in a lot of those movies that Todd Phillips revered and that he was trying to imitate. So he said, hey, why not have the guy come in and play the talk show host?
And it's cool that he got it. You know what I mean? That he actually got him to follow through.
And for what it's worth, I think Robert De Niro does a pretty competent job of this sort of paternalistic, He definitely is a little bit more sympathetic towards Arthur than you would think he would be. And but he also kind of is...
He's kind of exploiting him, though, too.
He is, yeah. Yeah.
Not even kind of. He is. Like when Arthur kisses Dr. Ruth.
Dr. Ruth, exactly, yeah. Dr. Sally.
That's who it was supposed to be, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think as soon as he sees Arthur in his Joker makeup, he's like, aw, this is going to be good for ratings.
Yeah, because he poo-poos his handler's warnings, and he's like, well, no, we'll put him on like this. It'll be fine.
They'll love it. What about the joke at the end where he says, what do you get? You get what you deserve.
It's not really a joke. I mean, it's, you know. And see, I kind of like, now, hear me out on this. I kind of like that the whole time before he went to the Murray show, he was planning to kill himself on live on the air. Because I hope my death means more than my life, right?
Do you think that's what it was? He was going to kill himself?
Yeah, because they showed him practice it once or twice in his chair at home, in his love seat, right? He just kept like saying the words, driver. And then he held it to his head, and blam, and then he laid down dead and smiled. I like that he planned it that way, and that either Murray pushed him or shit got too weird. For some reason, I like it better that he didn't go into it thinking about killing Murray. Does that make sense? I don't know why. To me, it seems more like a progression. I don't know. Maybe that's just dumb of me.
I think, yeah, and I think that's borne out in kind of the final joke in that scene where Murray always closes his show by saying, and remember, that's life, and then they play That's Life, where in this, he walks up to the camera and says, that's life, and gets cut off by... the technical difficulties, please stand by, graphic.
Great graphic. Did you get?
Yeah. Very network, absolutely, right there.
Oh, yeah. And it's just, they did so well with the setting of the 80s, too. The color tones, and whenever they went through like an 80s camera, everything was so washed out and nasty.
And costuming is great.
I like his... suit being a completely different take on the Joker one that we've seen. I like the red or orange suit with the, I think it's red suit, blue shirt, and orange vest.
Yep.
I think that's
and the
great.
Yellow vest.
Or yellow vest, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a wine or a maroon. Not purple, but it is purple. Like it, and they play with the lighting, too. He's lit different ways, and it kind of comes off differently.
Yeah, it's like red or maroon. It's a bright maroon. It's an orange-ish vest and like a olive-ish green shirt.
My favorite meme is they show a picture of McLovin. They're like, remember McLovin? This is him now. Feel old yet?
Oh, my God.
Anyway. Yeah. And then that's it, man. I mean, the riots happen. He is anointed king of the nerds. And, oh, one more thing happens. A happy couple and their son see Zorro, the gay blade, and decide to take a detour down an alley.
And then we get the ripped pearls and no dance with the devil beneath pale blue night, blue or pale moonlight, though. I was a little disappointed.
Let me ask you, as a kid. Oh, one thing. You ever dance with a devil?
Underneath the pale blue moonlight.
Pale moonlight. This town needs an enema. I was going to save that one. All right, never mind. So, what, like, again, umpteenth time that we've seen this on film, I've been told that the definitive take is Teen Titans Go to the Movies. Have you seen that yet?
No, what's that?
So, in that one, there's time travel, and they have to go back and set things right. So they basically have to like steer them into the path of the gun, and they put the pearls around her neck and go like, all right, here we go. You know what happens next?
So bad. Cause I mean, they've done it. They did a meme years ago, and it was like every Batman parent's death scene from everything ever.
Yep.
You know,
there's a super cut somewhere.
Yeah. But I think they like mash them up. They show you a couple of them, and then they like do the, you know, 16 windows in one video and play them all at the same time.
Yep.
Yeah. So good.
So Do you think that this is meant to tell us that this is the Joker or a Joker? Because again, the definitive article is not in the movie's title. This is not the Joker. This is Joker.
I think it could be the Joker if another Joker is going to quickly pick up shortly after. Otherwise, I think it is just the prototype Joker. I'd like it to be, because I'd like to see him again. I know we never will.
We may. But it made over $1 billion.
I know. But, okay, I don't want them to ruin it, because if it gets too big, I don't know. He's a great character, but if you do it too much, it's going to just go fucking sideways. You become mainstream. I
mean, does it work where they do what they always do in these movies, which is they make another villain, then he's got to go up against somebody? This works because it's him versus the world. I really think.
Oh, you mean like if there's a more evil person than the Joker is like actually the good guy, but he does bad stuff?
You know how that goes in these movies.
Again, I mean, I would like to see him be the Joker because I think it'd be fun, but the age difference is so drastic. If they would have had Bruce Wayne be 15 or 16 in this, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is playing with those ideas, but as much as you can look back at the iconic Jokers that we know, whether it's Heath Ledger, whether it's, for me, Mark Hamill, doing the voice in Batman the Animated Series and in the Arkham video games, this stands above them. I mean, I don't know. Like, this is a very good performance. I don't know if we ever get the unhinged madness
that we get with like Heath Ledger.
Yeah.
But we get close. Tragic. And like I said, the laugh. It really helps make it. And the way he like chokes and gargles and is gasping for breath because he can't stop laughing is horrific and moving all at the same time.
Yeah. So one interesting bit of trivia, that movie that they're leaving is the 1981 film Zorro the Gay Blade. The comics, the original Batman comics, established that it was another Zorro movie, the 1940 film The Mask of Zorro, that the Waynes were leaving. But because this is set in the 80s, it is the 81 release, along with Blowout, which is about John Travolta going psycho, apparently. I don't know.
Nice.
So, I guess with that all being said, do you think that there's a place for more of these types of films in Marvel, DC, comic book movies in general? I mean, we've kind of flirted with this with Logan and things like that, but to tell these standalone dark stories.
You could even do them. I think you can't. Yes, absolutely. 100%. Even more than 100%. I think you could even do them as anime or something. Get these stories out there like they're going to do with the Marvel What Ifs or whatever they're called. Right. One-offs.
Okay. Sure.
Because, you know, different origin stories, stuff like that. I mean, you're going to have people that hate it, but that's only really the super hard fanboys. Otherwise, people might, you know, be intrigued by it. I don't know. Why couldn't it, or what could it hurt to make more new stories? It's grounded with a character people like, so you can give him other scenarios or other situations or make tweaks to him a touch and hopefully, you know, go from there.
Right. And, you know, for what it's worth, I think there's an argument to be made that this movie cost almost nothing.
Literally.
And if you look at the return on investment, obviously, it was beyond all reasonable expectation that it made over $1 billion. And it was the sixth highest grossing film in a year that we had the highest grossing film of all time, Avengers Endgame. So, I mean, it's insane to consider any of that. But you could make these movies, and they don't have to make $1 billion to be financially successful. You could make them for 40, 50 million and make 100 million, 200 million back and still be doing all right. And kind of one of the other things that's interesting I'd want to know what Martin Scorsese thinks about this movie, right? He was fairly recently shitting on the Marvel movies for being theme park rides and not real theater.
Well, this isn't cinema, Marvel.
Film. I kind of would be curious to see what he thinks of this. It's not a Zack Snyder movie either. You know what I mean?
True. Yeah, it's not all spectacle.
I'd be interested to see what he makes of this, considering it's basically made in his image.
We have some news later about what a fancy writer-director thinks of some other movies.
That's true. So, anything else that you want to add to our discussion of Joker?
No, I think I'm getting there. What about you?
Okay. Well, I think I'm ready to pull on my clown shoes and insert my foot firmly in my mouth.
Do I look like the kind of clown that can rate a movie? For Joker, are we going legendary?
Making a killing joke.
Legend of its time.
Joke Man Begins.
Cult legend.
Why so serious?
Awesome.
Put on a happy face.
Entertaining.
Is it just me, or is it getting crazier out there?
That line in the beginning had me going, oh shit, he's right, it is.
Is it 2020 or 1981? I forget.
Mabel.
There is no punchline.
Forgettable.
You wouldn't get it.
Abysmal.
All I have are negative thoughts.
Spring Breakers D&D.
Suicide Squad.
Which in the news this week, I don't know if you have it in there, they say David Oyer might get a chance to put his one out.
Fuck him.
With a side of nostalgia, guilty pleasure, tingle barf tears.
With a side of Sondheim. Because you can be a Wall Street douche and no musical theater.
Exactly.
Beef, what are you thinking?
I'll jump off on here. I gotta go. This second time around, I had a lot more fun with it again than I thought I would. I still think I gotta leave it somewhere around entertaining. Clearly it made $1 billion, so it probably fits right around cult legend, because a lot of people loved it, a lot of people hated it, but a lot of people paid us saw it. And like you said, we will probably get another one. But personally, it's entertaining. It's probably not awesome for me because it is such an uncomfortable flick. There are times where you're just like, I root for him, like you're saying, and then closer to the middle and the end, I'm just like, dude, you are an evil motherfucker. So I got to go entertaining. I will definitely watch it a few more times throughout my career of watching shit on TV. So, Lobster?
Yeah, this one is tough for me. I was not a fan at first blush in the theaters. So I saw it with a friend of mine, Randy, and we kind of had this moment after the film where we had both kind of really been looking forward to it, and we walked out and we're like, was that good? Because it's so uncomfortable, jarring. All the way through. It's jarring. It's not what you expect. The film is constantly subverting your expectations of what this movie is going to be. It begs you to kind of watch it again and try to see what other delusions there are, what other things are unreliable in the storytelling. But the performance by Joaquin Phoenix is so captivating, so intense. I mean, this is his bread and butter, right? Like, he throws himself into these roles, much like Christian Bale. Is not afraid to drop a few pounds or 50 for a role, or in Christian Bale's case, gain a 50 pound.
Right.
Anyway.
Add a 50 burger.
But, yeah, sure. So, I mean, it is so intense, and you have this real sense that not only are you watching an amazing actor, you're kind of watching an amazing moment in filmmaking where comic book movies and art house movies are really colliding in this mashup. And whether you buy into it or not, I think this movie is enthralling and also horrifying.
Yes.
Right? Like, I mean, there are times where you don't know whether you're supposed to cheer or boo the character.
And that makes you really unfucking comfortable at those times.
That makes you really uncomfortable. And it's uncomfortable when you see it in theaters and somebody does the thing you don't think they should, like. So he's like, yeah. And you're like,
ooh, too soon.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like, I think that, at the very least, gets this up to cult legend. Because, obviously, being a box office success, you know, winning the Academy Award for Best Actor, he's now the second actor to win for playing the same comic book character, which is kind of crazy when you think about it, that I think this film is going to go down as a cult legend because people will go back to it. Again, just within the past week, this movie has felt more timely than ever in its depiction of standing up to systematic injustice. That, you know, obviously the motivations are different, but it's still, you know,
the visuals are there.
I looked at some of those protests and there are people out there dressed as the Joker. You know, there was somebody in Philly near here dressed as Batman, which is pretty crazy because it was like tear gas and stuff going off and he's just like calmly walking through it. So, these roles are now Shakespeare, right? And, you know, you have all these actors who are famous for playing Hamlet or King Lear or Romeo, you know, all these great roles. And now it's the Joker, Batman, Logan, right? So that is so interesting that we now live in this time. And I want to say that this is the film where others have tried, and certainly Christopher Nolan, I think, came the closest, but legitimizing comic book source material as legitimate filmmaking, right? Not popcorn entertainment, but legitimate filmmaking. So I think at the very least, why so serious, right? Can't we all have a little fun?
Last word on Joker.
Well, since I used "This Town Needs an Enema," I'm going to say beef. You are my number one guy.
And I, last word, am just going to go, I really like that fucking suit.
That's a nice suit. You're going to get one?
I might. Honestly, okay. I might.
All right.
Oh, no, I didn't think I'd have a beard. I got a beard now.
Okay. Oh, that's right. Okay. Beef, what time is it?
Nose time. That one, all right. That one hurt.
Oh, it's the beard talk. Mm-hmm. the dog has stopped barking. The box office is...
The what?
limping back to life in a weird way.
Flaccid as it could be.
Well, I mean, you'll be shocked to know that a film... Oh, there we go again. A film broke a box office record this weekend, held by films such as Black Panther and Avatar. Or I should say it reached a box office record. So The Wretched, this horror film that has been playing almost exclusively at drive-in theaters, has been number one at the box office for five straight weekends.
Damn, that's pretty good.
That is very good.
But it's the record like five straight weeks at less than 900 grand.
That is definitely saying something. So certainly the overall total isn't great, but I mean, that's a pretty good run.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's, I gotta give shit because shit's gotta be given that they're making sure more money than anything we would do, right? So congrats to them.
And from what I'm hearing, there's a lot of behind the scenes negotiation to get the streaming rights for it, because
again,
number one in the country for 5 weeks. When no one can go anywhere.
These people are so excited, whoever made this movie, like, thank you, pandemic. Now we can sell this puppy to a streamer.
So along with The Wretched is We Summon the Darkness, which we talked about a little bit ago. The trailer, The Trip to Greece, How to Build a Girl, and True History of the Kelly Gang at $41 gross.
What was The True History of Kelly Gang? Is that like
It's the history of a gang
named Kelly's,
the Ned Kelly gang, I believe.
It's like a documentary or just like a movie?
No, it's got what's his name in it.
Oh, the dude with the thing at the facial hair or not, depending.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
that guy. You know exactly who I'm talking about. I think he's white.
yeah. Unless he's got a tan, then I don't know.
So, along with that are some top DVD and streaming movies, the top video on demand movies that people are watching this past weekend.
Do any of these really surprise you, though?
Well, The High Note with Dakota Johnson and Tracy Ellis Ross, daughter of Diana Ross, she's playing a singer. Scoob, Trolls World Tour, Invisible Man. I was surprised to see that Knives Out is in the top 10. Above Fantasy Island. That's pretty cool.
Oh, I see one we should add for the cast. Surviving the Night. It's got 22% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Ooh, it's a, sexy.
It's a new Bruce Willis joint.
Yeah, well, I think from this list, I guess Invisible Man. If I was going to pick one.
Oh, a serious one? Yeah, probably Invisible Man.
Okay, so moving into more of the news. We did talk last weekend about Ruby Rose exiting the role of Batwoman as kind of a surprise. She has weighed in on Instagram. Do you want to read her little statement that she gave?
Sure. I think I can handle that. Thank you, everyone, for coming on this journey. If I've mentioned everyone, it would be a thousand tags. But thank you to the cast, crew, producers, and studio. It wasn't an easy decision, but those who know, know.
Ooh.
I don't want to acknowledge everyone involved and how big this was for TV and for our community. I have stayed silent because that's my choice for now. But no, I do adore all of you. I'm sure next season will be amazing. I'm sure next season will be amazing also. XXX hangs up cowl and cape.
Oh. Those who know, know.
It's
so some shit went down.
Yeah,
right?
It's a classy out, but it's still like a yeah, fuckers. Yeah,
thank you to everybody who helped me.
Yeah.
But fuck all y'all who didn't.
Right. Something.
Hate us.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is all we're going to get. She's going to go on to do other stuff that probably won't be related to TV
or related to fandom in any way, shape, or form. Because, you know, I don't know if you know this, but fans are dicks.
I do know.
Oh, and fan is short for the word fanatic, so that's why they're dicks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, they'll come on your talk show and straight shoot you in the face.
Right.
Oh, no, that's...
Wait, that was imagined.
May have been imagined.
We don't know.
You wouldn't get it. So, to go off of that, speaking of filmmaking and films that don't... Oh, okay. So, Quentin Tarantino, right? Famous writer-director... From all the things, he's made nine movies, he says, even though Kill Bill is two movies and Death Proof is half a movie.
Let's stop with that. He's made nine. That's fine. Math's different in his world.
He's been in the news talking about movies he likes. So he's interviewed by, you know, they showed him a list of movies from the past decade. And they said, Quentin, what's your favorite movie from the past 10 years? And he said, The Social Network.
Hands down, number one.
Hands down, numero uno.
It is number one because it's the best.
Is it, though?
You know what? I can see how a filmmaker would beat off to that because, I mean, Wing beats off to that. Like, Wing's like, oh, it's so great.
Oh, Sorkin dialogue.
Right, dialogue and the shots. And yeah, I mean.
Winklevi. Oh.
I enjoy it more than I thought I would every time I watch it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe that just proves how classy Wing is compared to us. Like, he's like Quentin Tarantino level, or I don't know.
You like what's his name, who's not Indian, plays an Indian guy?
I think, but movies are also subjective.
What's his name, who's not a twin, plays twins?
Like, stop, though, because all this shit is so subjective. What
you like,
what's
his name, who's Spider-Man, doesn't play Spider-Man? You like Lex Luthor and fucking Justin Timberlake?
Okay, now I'm like forced. I'm like 17 degrees of separation. I forgot where we were. But
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
Is it an okay movie for Quentin Tarantino to like? Is it okay that he likes
we
that?
Can all that okay, that's exactly what it is. It's our all of our shit is so subjective and different. I can like a lot of shit and then I see something that's very similar to it and I might not like it. It's cool that he, you know, it's cool that as a filmmaker he can pick a favorite.
I like that he probably looked at this list and was like, I will pick a movie from this list to say that, you know, is the
and everybody's the best. Running with it.
But I think he's got another list in his head of movies that he likes that aren't on anyone's list. And I think that if Quentin Tarantino,
you think
like,
so though?
I think legitimately he would name some obscure movie that no one will have heard of. And we'd be like, no, this is it. And we'd be like, what?
Okay.
Even more so than we are now.
Maybe, but the fact that, like, I kind of always pictured Quentin Tarantino as kind of a dick. Now, don't send your hate mail to me yet. And Quentin, if you ever happen to hear this, Mr. Tarantino, I don't mean that. Walk with me. It's a journey. But, like, he's made
his
money.
You're kind of an asshole.
Right. I'm kind of an asshole. He's, like, he's made his money.
He has
praise. I don't think he needs anyone's like approval. So if he wanted to be like, no, you know, these are all lame. My favorite movie is this. I think he'd like, no one would scoff at that. Right. No one would be like, oh, Quentin Tarantino was weird.
He made the news sort of similarly because he said he liked Dunkirk a lot. And that took people kind of by surprise. Not that Dunkirk is bad and not that The Social Network is bad, if I'm being honest. I liked it a lot more when we rewatched it this year than I remembered liking it originally. So, you hear her?
Is she whimpering?
Yeah.
Open the door. Open the door.
Okay. I just want to finish.
Dunkirk.
I think if I was going to argue with Quentin Tarantino, I would be like, but Quentin, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is the best movie for the last 10 years. What are you talking about? And he'd be like, oh, okay, you're right, Lobster.
I saw a smash cut of all the like movies of his put together. It was like the Quentin Tarantino super trailer.
Right.
And I was at work and I watched this like 6-minute trailer. I wrote down 9 of the movies again. Like all of his movies, I'm like Kill Bill, Hateful Eight miniseries, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Yeah. I think I wrote down everything except like Pulp Fiction because I've seen that recently. Yeah. So, yeah.
But anyway, I don't know. This isn't really news. It's just like an interesting discussion to have. And again, we all, I think, admire Tarantino, not necessarily for he can do no wrong, but he definitely is both a competent filmmaker and a scholar of filmmaking.
And a lot of his films have so many of the same similar shots that it's interesting because they're all used so well and different.
Just like they show Joker in Joker, just like they showed Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight. They do the same shot when he's in the cop car.
Yes, when he's like got his head against the window.
Yep.
And I think they also have the same front of Arkham or the same, it's like the same hallway in the asylum that
it all looks the same.
Apple Studios will produce a very expensive period crime drama that will, of course, star Leonardo DiCaprio and Robert De Niro because it is made by Scorsese.
Yeah. So Netflix said, no, we're not going to bankroll another movie. But Apple TV said, sure, we will. And they're going to make Killers of the Flower Moon. To like $150 million, something like that.
Where I read what it was about somewhere, 1920s, set in 1920s Oklahoma, where the Osage Nation discovered oil under their land. The Native Americans found themselves being murdered one by one as the death toll rises. The newly created FBI took up the case to unravel a
chilling
conspiracy.
Oklahoma in the 20s, I'm telling you, man.
Oh, fuck.
Yep.
Wow.
1921.
Yeah, no, that's, that started it. Okay, well, that makes sense. Racists.
So,
but
Disney.
Are you gonna?
I'm sorry.
Are you gonna pay for Apple for this still, or are you just gonna wait till we can get it somewhere else?
I still haven't watched The Irishman, and I have Netflix.
Neither have I. Good point.
So, I mean, my impetus to like want to check
what
this
happened?
Out. Impetus.
Oh, my bad.
My impotence. I can't get up. I can't be bothered. No, to get the remote. I can't be bothered.
I don't want
to
change a channel.
Yeah. I swear this never happens to me.
Whiskey.
Disney.
Oh, sorry.
Will not be able to pack its parks with people due to social distancing. And more interestingly, because they're going to have to defray some of that expense, they may just go ahead and release Mulan on streaming and not theatrically.
Which is fine, I guess. I mean, theaters are either going to open or die whenever theaters open or die. But they have to realize that even though Disney made $78 billion last year, they are a company as well. But I hate how this is written. Disney won't be able to jam people on prices at parks.
Well, they do. I mean, if you've ever... I don't know if you have.
I guess I haven't. But what I read is that they're going to like raise prices even more. I guess it'd be price gouging, not price jamming.
Yeah.
Story felt like it would be they wanted to raise prices just for the minimal amount of people that were going to be able to come in.
I mean, you'd think they would want to lower to try to get more people to, I don't know.
I don't know. I really want Tenet to come out still.
I was kind of more interested in the Mulan thing. Like, it never felt to me like they had a hit on their hands with this. Although, as excited as I was to see it, it's kind of like, yeah.
You think they're shuffling it?
I don't know if it's a loss. Do you know what I mean? Like, was it really going to make that much this summer?
Disney made $13 billion in 2019.
Right. They can afford to have a flop in a year they release eight movies.
Even if they lose $2 billion this year, they're still cleared $13 billion last year.
Yeah, I don't know how that works, but I don't know.
I don't know. Investors might have to lose a couple dollars on stock points till 2021 when they come back and own everything again. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
So I read something like they're going to get the rights to Daredevil back in 6 weeks or something so they can start playing around with that. I don't know how this all works.
I want what's-his-face still, though, Matt Murdock or whatever.
Charlie Cox.
God damn it. That's him, too.
I don't care about him. I want Vincent D'Onofrio as the Kingpin in a Spider-Man movie.
He should be the voice in the next Spider-Verse. And then his proportions aren't right, though. But I guess they could make him work.
I loved him in Daredevil. Ryan Gosling. Okay. Would you like to see him get all hairy for the Wolfman?
Why would you take... That's like taking a really attractive dude or female and making them the invisible man or woman.
Well, to be fair, they did do a Wolfman movie with Benicio del Toro.
Did they?
They did. And he's not a very... how should I put this delicately? He's not classically handsome, we'll say, in the way that Ryan Gosling is. They did Wolfman in like 2007, 2008, maybe.
So I just, I mean, I guess I don't care. Is this more of the freaking, this is the Monsters universe. Who gives a shit about this anymore? Like, they're trying to connect all this stuff.
They have the rights to it. They have the rights to it, and they made Invisible Man with Blumhouse, and that seemed to work.
I guess if they make it and it's at all seems okay, you know, who gives a fuck if I watch something with a Wolfman or a Batgirl or whatever, you know, if it's got a semi-compelling story, or I already pay for Netflix and it's a Saturday, or it comes out on my shitty HBO Now / free Max.
We'll talk about that in a second.
What about you?
You say you don't want...
Would you watch it?
Would
you go out of your way to consume Wolfman with Ryan Gosling?
Depending on the phase of the moon, I suppose. I do like some of the wolf movies. Like, I'm a big fan of American Werewolf in London. I liked Brotherhood of the Wolf that we talked about. The Wolf Man. Give me an angle. Like, I don't know. Teen Wolf, at least he was like a high school kid.
What if he's like a John Wick style assassin, but... Every month he turns into a wolf, so he books his hardest jobs on that part.
He does all of them at once, one night.
Yeah, one night. He's like Santa Claus of Wolfman assassinry. Hashtag copyright Wholesome Addiction or Legends podcast. Ooh. Sorry.
Copywriting it on your other podcast. Sorry. That is harsh, dude. Sorry. That is harsh.
Copyright Legends podcast. Legends I will podcast. Edit that.
I think that would be cool. I think if I was going to pitch a Ryan Gosling Wolfman movie, it would be a romantic comedy, right? I would play to Ryan Gosling's strengths and his charm and do...
Didn't he do Driver or Driven?
He did, and he can do those gritty things, certainly Blade Runner, but I think to play to his strengths, mm-hmm. you do it as almost like a Mrs. Doubtfire type romantic okay, comedy. Right. Where he's got to, like, hide his hairy paw right. somehow.
He's got to quick finish you know, the date. He's got to drop her off fast before the moon comes up. So he's uh-huh. like, oh, God, how did I forget today? This month was a full moon.
Like, they're at dinner, and he's like, you know, can we not sit by the window? And they're like, no, that's like, the only place we have. And so they have to sit by the window.
The progression starts from his feet
up. The moon comes out, and he, like, all of a sudden, he sprouts a beard. Because it just hits his face, okay. you know?
But you could do like the...
And he's like trying to eat the soup. It's getting all stuck in his beard.
You could do like the slow progression where it like starts from his feet up. So he's like eating everything really fast. Like, you know, yep. he's got like an hour left before it hits his...
They bring out the steak and he's just like... and then he starts like licking his balls.
Copyright whatever show I'm on today.
Yep. I would do like they did with The Invisible Man. Not try to go super big budget. Like they did The Invisible Man as like psychological thriller.
Okay.
I would play to Gosling's strengths on this and have him be like a charming.
See, if they did that differently, you're right. Guy. Like if they're all different settings, like if this one would be a romantic comedy, that could work.
Yep. That's what I'm saying.
You know what? I think everything we've pitched here is going to be better than whatever they come out.
Dude, yeah. you know. Call us. Studios, money, please.
3 years from now, when this puppy comes out, I want to revisit this cast right now.
We'd have to listen to Joker again, but...
Yeah, well, I can fast forward by then.
So, have you checked out the YouTube series Cobra Kai?
No.
I hear it's really good.
I do, too, because I'm a kid of the 80s, so I've been told from multiple people... But
you have to pay for it. You have to pay to watch it on YouTube. And YouTube, I don't pay for things. I don't even watch the ads. I skip them. So YouTube has a premium service.
YouTube Red.
Where you can pay. Yeah. And you can watch, you know, exclusive content. And Cobra Kai is a scripted series, a sequel to The Karate Kid. But it's produced by Sony, and they may move it to a more prestigious streaming service.
Like Hulu
or Netflix, because... YouTube isn't going to focus on scripted originals as much.
Yeah, I read...
Because no one was paying to watch them.
I read this, and Cobra Kai I'm sad about, but what I'm even more upset about is they only produced 2 seasons of Impulse, and unless Netflix or Amazon scoops in, that was the Jumper series with a...
Did you watch that?
Yeah, that was awesome.
Did you pay to watch that?
Yes, I paid to watch the second Ooh. Season. First season, I... didn't because I was a bad person, but I paid to watch the second season because I really enjoyed the first season so much, and when it came out I got my YouTube for whatever a month thing and crammed it in and was done. But that's a good one, Jumper type show called Impulse, but apparently that hasn't been picked up by anybody, so sad.
So I will look forward to Cobra Kai being somewhere I can watch it, because I hear,
because you have Hulu, right?
And the Netflix. I have the both.
The Netflix, the both. Yep. There should be start calling like different color packages. You know what I mean?
I have Hulu Green, Netflix Red, and HBO Purple.
Right. I got the Disney Plus,
it's blue.
HBO, the Netflix, purple. The Amazon.
Red. Green.
Mm.
No?
I don't know. Blue, I think.
I'm not sure. Yeah, kind of yellow. Anyway.
Speaking of the hedgehog colors, apparently that fucker's getting another movie because it did really well. Let's put it this way. They thought they were going to lose all this money. They put all this more money into it. They fixed it. And then people were like, huh? And then it came out when everybody's at home. Uh-huh. So more people that are older that have a nostalgia to the game are buying it for their kids going,
Golden Rings.
I can check it out.
Mm-hmm. Did you watch it?
Not yet.
Me neither. No, it's like, I didn't see it. I wasn't going to see it anyway.
But see, now that it's like streaming, I might actually, I can find that anywhere.
Yeah.
You want the next one? Because isn't he like your dude? Not in as much as Spider-Man.
I do like Henry Cavill. I do like Henry Cavill. So I wouldn't say Superman necessarily, but big fan of him on The Witcher. Henry Cavill kind of had a moment in late 2019 where he starred in a Netflix series called The Witcher and endeared himself more to fans than he ever did as Superman. I'll say it. So I think people started to realize that Henry Cavill had, and it starts with a P, and it's big.
Potential.
It's a big personality.
No.
So people started to like Henry Cavill and connect with him in a way that they never did when he played Superman. But he was kind of done playing Superman because Justice League didn't do well. And they CGI'd out his mustache, and they killed him off in Mission Impossible. So he might come back as Superman, but they're not actually greenlighting a... This is important. They're not actually greenlighting a new Superman series. Remember, Man of Steel 2 was Batman v. Superman, Dawn of Justice. So far, Henry Cavill has only starred in one standalone Superman movie. And they're not going to make another one. It's just he may start to show up in other things, whether it's Shazam,
that'd be great.
Black Adam, Wonder Woman, Aquaman. Take your pick.
Why not? He'll be this Iron Man.
Yeah, so...
Because Iron Man, I've seen him compared in these stories to... oh, my God. Nick Fury. But
yeah,
I think he's more the Iron Man.
And so kind of the other idea is that in... whatever Snyder cut they come out with, they may have to reshoot some of his stuff because, remember, CGI lip looked bad. So they may redo some of that sans mustache and see how that turns out.
Yeah, whatevs. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm okay. I mean, I like Henry Cavill. I'm more interested in seeing him play a good Superman, hopefully under the tutelage of someone other than Zack Snyder.
Speaking of Snyder Cut and the fucking Ayer Cut.
HBO Purple.
They are spending, yes. Well, yes, my HBO Now got basically instantly upgraded to HBO Max. I didn't even have to download a new app. They all updated themselves. I'm glad I didn't rush out or worry about this because apparently they don't have much of shit.
Well, okay, so did you spend much time going through that?
No,
the app
I kind of, I mean, let's put it this way. I haven't looked much yet. Saturday I'll probably look, or Sunday.
Yeah, so I spent a fair amount of time this past week just playing around with it because I wanted to see how it compared to some other services.
Are there some glaring missings I've heard?
There are. It's kind of a weird thing. I think it's more of a branding issue, if I'm honest.
Okay.
Because it doesn't feel HBO-y. There's a lot of HBO content that, you know, I already had access to with HBO Go. But for the...
HBO Now.
For the HBO... Yeah, so HBO Now. I'm sorry. So you get all this extra content... But it's not really, you know how Disney Plus has that banner at the top where you can click Marvel, you can click Disney, you can click Pixar, National Geographic, whatever, and it'll take you to that stuff. They kind of bury it on HBO Max, where you have Turner Classic Movies content, you have the HBO original content, you have Studio.
There's not tabs
Ghibli,
for it.
Ghibli, they are, but they're kind of buried. You have a lot of DC content, and you have Looney Tunes,
okay.
A lot of Looney Tunes, and some Cartoon Network stuff and Adult Swim. So it's all there. There really is a lot of stuff to watch, and I was surprised. There's a lot of deep cut Godzilla films. I have Mothra versus Godzilla in my queue. Can't wait to watch that. A lot of the Turner Classic Movies, some stuff that's from the Criterion Collection, Hidden Fortress, Seven Samurai, all these classic movies. The HBO stuff that we already kind of had, But the Adult Swim, Cartoon Network stuff, you know, there's a lot, right? Could it be organized better? Yes.
Do you think they're scrambling right now? Like, design us a better app, Johnson.
Well, I mean, give me an app where I can put... Yeah, give me an interface where I can put my list in order. Give me an interface where I can skip the main titles.
On. Time out.
Yeah?
First week at Disney Plus, remember how horrible their interface was?
Yes.
There, you couldn't even... They didn't even have a resume playing what episode you were on. Yeah.
Yep.
So...
And you have to... I don't understand how these people are not looking at Netflix and Hulu.
Right.
And being like, I mean, Amazon has that awesome X-ray feature. Have you played around with that?
No, what's that?
Or if you pause it. So if you're watching on the Amazon Prime app, mm-hmm. if you pause whatever you're watching, it shows you who's in the scene, and you can click on their profiles and see other stuff that they're in.
Oh, yeah,
it will tell
yeah.
you what song is playing. Yep, yep. It's all these cool features.
I didn't know that's what it was called. That is, I think that's one of the best.
And, I mean, Netflix really has it down, the whole skip titles, skip to the next episode.
Yeah, 5 seconds to an episode.
Pick up right where you left off, curate your list, put your list in order, the whole deal. Well, I don't know how these people are not looking at these. And I think brand-wise, they're underselling themselves by calling it HBO Max. So here's what happened. AT&T bought Warner, bought, you know, whatever. It's this massive conglomerate now to get all of this content under one umbrella. But HBO Max doesn't say Warner Brothers. It doesn't say all this amazing content that you're going to get. So I think it's kind of a branding failure as well.
Yeah, I mean, you're kind of, like you said, limiting yourself and shooting yourself in the foot. It should do something that says more, or... I don't know, Ultimate Collection or whatever.
Yeah. So I'll talk a little bit later about what I watched from it so far, but I'm not down on it. Again, it's something I got for something I had. You know what I mean? Like, it was a trade-off and you get more stuff, but still it's expensive, $14.99 a month, and I can't watch it on our Amazon Fire Stick or on our Roku. There still is not an app for... those. So right now I've only been watching it on my phone.
Do you have a Samsung phone? Can you throw it to your TV?
That doesn't work seamlessly. Okay. And then I can't do stuff on my phone while I do
it. True.
So I would rather just have an app on the thing that I'm using for Netflix and Hulu, and I was using for Amazon or for HBO Go. So, you know, it's...
Well, yeah.
It's a trade-off. I don't, you know.
I'm sure they have it on, like, Xbox and PS4, but the one that I watch a lot of my crap on is in my room, and it's an old Xbox 360. So I don't even have HBO or Disney on there yet, because it's ancient.
Yeah.
So,
again, like, it's not, to me, terrible. It was honestly a nice surprise finding some of the stuff on there, and there's stuff I'm looking forward to watching. I can't recommend you, if you're debating going out, I think, and paying for a new streaming service, look at Disney Plus as being a better value
in terms of
the content library. I think it was much more clearly communicated, the content that you're going to get from that. But I got to say, like, still with HBO Max, the classic films that are on there, the Alien films, the whole quadrilogy is on there. They have all 8 Harry Potter films that you can watch. They had most of the Lord of the Rings series, with the exception, I think, of one movie. But, it's in The Hobbit.
I may pay the $14 or whatever it is, $12.99, whatever the hell it is, for HBO Max. I've been paying that for HBO now for years. But it's like, I'm used to it, and the content's there when I want it. And,
they have Westworld and Game of Thrones and all the stuff that you're watching anyway.
All the documentaries Lobster and I talk about.
Sure. Yep.
Hey, all you cool cats and kittens, it's time for Beef's Tiger King Corner. And that bitch, Carol Baskins, has been awarded the zoo and property once owned by Tiger King Joe Exotic.
What the what?
Yeah, the judge ruled in favor of Carol Baskin's Big Cat Rescue Corporation Monday, in the lawsuit, the one that they talk about on Netflix where he had to owe her $1 million. So basically, they're paying her out in his land, 16 acres of land, and apparently several cabins and vehicles. But the thing I don't understand is, so they have 120 days to vacate the land, and the animals must go. So they're clearly taking him to a new zoo, but what's Carol Baskin's going to do with the fucking land? She going to open her own new zoo?
I mean, if she's smart, she'll open Tiger King theme park.
Yeah.
And make a killing. Like, if she just trades in on the Netflix name, then she could have a whole exhibit. Like, did Carol Baskin kill her husband? Yes and yes. Or yes.
Yes and no. Maybe. I don't know. Do cats or do sardines like whatever? Kittens like sardines?
Put sardine oil on them. Yep.
I mean, mark my words, Joe might hang himself in the next 3 days in prison. This is horrible.
It is certainly a blow.
This is fucking... He's probably been living high because she's been getting called out on probably killing her husband.
Yeah.
And now this is like everything worked for is gone to your nemesis.
Always going to lose that lawsuit. You know what I mean? Like, it's just... This is what he has to pay with. All he has is his land.
Oh,
and now he doesn't have that. He's a king without a kingdom.
Oh, I am sad for that mullet-having mofo.
It is tragic, you know?
And Queeby sucks.
Hashtag Queeby sucks. Notice we didn't say, go out and get Queeby. Don't.
Fuck no. You could probably steal all their shit online. I could tell you 5 websites. Email me.
So, obviously...
That's not true, NSA. I don't know any websites.
What? No, I was going to say, obviously, Hollywood is a little preoccupied right now with all of the unrest and reactions and anger and frustration and outpouring of emotion that we only have 3 trailers to talk about this week, and these dropped pretty early in the week. So, we're going to talk a little bit about stuff coming up and then what we've been watching. So the first trailer is Star Wars Kids Jedi Temple Challenge. Beef, did you have Nick as a youngster, Nickelodeon?
I did. This reminds me of, what was the...
Legends of the Hidden Temple.
Legends of the Hidden Temple. And I think you're too young for it, but like... there was like a family food. Yeah, Guts. There's like a family feud of like...
Double Dare?
Yes. Double Dare. This reminds me of Double Dare and the first one you said, mashed together.
It looks a lot like a lot of fun. It's a YouTube series. I don't know if this is going to be on the YouTube you have to pay for or not. I was surprised it wasn't going to be on Disney Plus because it seems like perfect content for them.
Well, but they're going to buy it from YouTube in about 2 months.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. So this is a reality competition show where kids get to compete these basically Star Wars themed escape rooms and stuff.
Yeah, and like intelligence quizzes and, you know, under pressure, build the puzzle, and I don't know.
I really liked it. I liked this trailer.
It looked fun. It looked more fun than the next trailer.
Perry Mason going to be on HBO.
I really wanted to like this because it's HBO.
And he's the guy from The Americans, right?
Reese, Adam.
Yeah, for Matthew.
Matthew Reese. I think so.
John Lithgow, other guy.
Yeah, again.
Well, I thought this looked good.
Well, maybe I got to watch it again. I don't know.
It's a period piece. He's a detective.
Perry Mason. That's detective. You're a dick, aren't you? Yeah, private, man.
See? And I would have gotten away for it, too, if it wasn't for HBO Max. Okay. Movie. I thought this was a show at first, but movie coming to Disney Plus, The Secret Society of Secondborn Royals.
The concept I like. They had me with, like...
Secret Gene.
No, yeah, that's where they lost me. They had me at, like, the spies. They had me at... what's the movie?
Spy Kids?
No, with the...
Kim Possible.
Stop it. The Taylor dudes.
The Kingsman.
I wanted it to be like the secret society of secondborn royals, where they're kingsmen. They're just regular people that protect regular their human families. Beings. But apparently, someone's been playing with the gene pool and fucking with only the secondborns of royals, so they come out with an unknown power to all of them that they will soon learn through training. Like,
That's why I thought this was a TV show, because I was like, that's a lot of setup for an hour and a half
that's
movie.
15 minutes in the fucking beginning, dude.
Yeah.
That's the trailer is the beginning.
I guess.
I don't know. It looks quirky and fun, but I'm not going to.
Yeah, I really like your idea where it's just they're like the Kingsmen.
Right.
Where then they get trained. Like, the figurehead does like the diplomatic stuff, and they're like behind the scenes, like taking care of assassins and stuff like that. Like
way more than the head of security. They're like the bond of every family.
Yep. And they have a perfect cover. They travel everywhere. Right. The royal goes.
Why is your younger brother here? Duh.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And
or younger sister.
They took it a step too far. Right. A step too
when
far.
When they
sir.
Said that, I was like, motherfucker. And see, they even had a little like daredevil type course in there too, or double dare type course in the thing they're running through. Like, I don't know. Yep. A step too far. See, we're gold, Lobster. We are gold tonight.
I don't know. Well, what interests me now is what has inspired us in our creativity. What have we been consuming to fuel our brilliant brains?
Well, I jammed my finger really bad at work today, and it's, it's painful. But, anyways.
Left or right?
My left index finger. I smashed my right index finger about 20 years ago on a 30-ton short stack hydraulic press. That wasn't good.
You still have it?
Yep. On 21 stitches, I split the knuckle and another part of the knuckle. The doctor said he had never seen so many stitches in one finger. Anyways, they were surprised I kept it, but the other one's just sprained.
Okay. All right, so if you're done throwing up, Beef's going to tell you what he watched.
Sorry about that. I don't have any pictures of the finger either when it was mangled.
I'm still
watching Fringe, which is awesome and fun. Rick and Morty finished their season. Episode 10 came out finally. The whole season is good, but episodes 9 and 10, it feels like they got everybody back again, and the jokes and the innuendos and all the craziness is coming at you at breakneck speed. Then, was it Saturday, I think I shared in our GroupMe, I sat down and I just decided to flip on Amazon Prime, and The Vast of Night was in what people are currently watching.
Sure.
So I watched it. It was a cool hour and 30, hour and 40 minutes. This is an example on the power of storytelling. There's not a lot of jazz and flim-flam and flair. It's
no flim-flam. I like
it's talking and dialogue and people and emotions and wonder. And it's just so much fun. Like, I honestly turned the subtitles on because and this is all like New Mexico in the 40s. Like, I turned just because of the jive talking and the flim flam and the fucking. Recommend
the bee's knees. Now see here.
Yeah, I mean it's a high school girl and a high school boy, or just out of high school boy, and they're like, shit's going on. You just watch it and turn the subtitles on. If you don't understand it in the first 5 minutes, back it up to the beginning and put the subtitles on.
Yeah, so I remember us talking about this trailer a while back, and it was kind of on my radar then. And then I think last week when I was looking at the Rotten Tomatoes, it's like 91% fresh, 92% fresh.
Dude, it's a much weirder burn than I thought it was going to be, but great movie.
So I will definitely be checking this out soon. Rick and Morty is on HBO Max, except for the most recent season.
Okay.
So I really want that to hit so I can watch all of it somewhere, because I have not seen any of season 4 of R&M. But I went on a deep dive, my friend.
Yeah.
On HBO Max, they have all 10 seasons of Robot Chicken, the original Rick Sanchez experimenting on that poor chicken.
Nice.
So I remember watching Robot Chicken back in the day. I had not seen the most recent season, season 10. So I did watch all of that. It's so fun because it's like what, 10, 15 minute episodes, and you can just kind of plow through them all and, you know, a lunch break, or basically what Quibi has been trying and failing to do, they've been doing for like 20 years, it feels like. So that's fun. Also on HBO Max is Space Ghost Coast to Coast.
Nice.
Such a fun. I have not cracked into that yet, but I am definitely going to. Okay. So new series on Netflix, Space Force, with Steve Carell and John Malkovich. And meh.
Is it like they took the dude from The Office and just put him in this?
Yeah, and he kind of does a growly voice instead of like his regular voice, which gets a little annoying. It has its moments. It definitely cannot decide what show it wants to be. It veers wildly from Veep-style satire or Avenue 5-style satire to very heartfelt family drama to very inspiring, patriotic, let's put a man on the moon kind of vibe.
Hmm.
Apollo 13 and all that. The right stuff.
Well, no, then.
Yeah, it's really inconsistent. A lot of the jokes don't land, but it's painfully obvious that they spent a lot of money on it. And I feel bad for them.
Eh, well, that happens.
So,
them and TV.
Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 7 just premiered.
God, this thing's still going.
Still going. So Season 7 premiered. I watched that first episode, thought that was great. They're in the 1930s. Speaking of, now see here. Great. And speaking of Space Force, I watched the NASA and SpaceX Falcon 9 and Crew Dragon launch last Saturday.
Cool. How'd that go?
Well, they made it. They got to the International Space Station, so without dying. So that was cool.
So that's what we can look forward to in July, is some sort of space plague they bring back?
Yes. The Andromeda strain will return.
Right.
Well, the memes are basically, they're getting the fuck out of here because
Earth
be fucked.
Yeah.
But that's, again, I didn't consume as much media this past week as I did the week before because I've kind of been watching the news to see.
Oh, this weekend I ain't watching any news. I didn't consume much last week. This weekend it's all consumption.
Very good.
Next time, Legends Podcast, Never Surrender, a Galaxy Quest documentary. I know you went to the theater for this, didn't you?
I did. I saw this in the theater. But there was an issue with the projector where it didn't play the first, like, 10 minutes.
What?
We could only hear it.
What?
Yeah.
And they didn't back it up for you?
No, they sucked. So
this will be, like, new territory for you for 10 minutes.
At least the first 10 minutes, yeah.
Have a comment, question, or recommendation? Email us, legendspodcasts@gmail.com, with an extra S for smile.
We'll put a smile on that face.
This has been episode 475 of Legends Podcast. I'm Beef saying Wrangler jeans. No,
why?
They're not affiliated. But if you've seen Rick and Morty season 4, episode 10, you know why.
All right. You typed it in the doc like 3 times.
I know, because I kept putting it in the wrong place. I put it for last word on Joker, and I'm like, no, not there.
I'm John a Lobster saying, where does he get those wonderful toys?
Wrangler jeans.
Wrangler jeans. In his Wrangler jeans.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to leave us feedback, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Legends Podcast. You can also send us an email to legendspodcasts@gmail.com. That is podcast, plural. For all our contact information, as well as other shows, look to GunnaGeek.com. You can also visit legendspodcast.com, where you'll find our complete archives. The music heard on this show is Danger Storm by Kevin MacLeod and can be found at incomputech.com. The opinions on this podcast are those of each individual host and do not represent Legendstream Canada or Gunna Geek. No infringement is intended.